let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us coast to coast This Week in America. One reviewer calls it the most insightful and actionable book I've had read this year. The book, Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success, by three-time Amazon best-selling author Jack Quarles. His bestsellers, How Smart Companies Save Money, and along with Ian Altman, Same Side Selling, and now Expensive Sentences. Jack is an international trainer, speaker, consultant who's helped companies save tens of millions of dollars, 2 decades in the field of expense management, the co-founder of multiple startups, currently serving on the boards of 2 international nonprofits, degrees from Yale University and Northwestern's Kellogg School of Business, author of Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. Jack Quarles with us on This Week in America. Jack, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Rick, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the introduction and especially appreciate your time. I've been looking forward to this conversation for some time.
And I have as well. This is an excellent book, Expensive Sentences. We'll be doing multiple shows with Jack because it's a fascinating topic. And we'll lay the groundwork here in a second. But first of all, a simple definition of expensive sentences, because these are really simple sentences that most of us accept as logic.
Well, I think that's where it starts. And the danger is, when the 20% of the time that they're not true or they're not helpful, and where that leads you. So when we say something like, well, it's too late to turn back now, or we're too swamped to deal with that, or the customer is always right, those little phrases drive more decisions than we realize, certainly in a corporate environment, and I think also in our personal lives. And I'm on a mission to help people hear those and then give them a little bit more scrutiny so they can decide when they're useful and when they are toxic advice.
You say in the beginning of the book, Expensive Sentences, one of the great plot devices, the trap or the snare, and you sort of compare expensive sentences to that. And when you think about it, that's it, because the hero usually falls into a trap of some kind. We oftentimes fall into a trap of some kind because of expensive sentences. That's a great way to explain it.
Yes, I actually do my impersonation of Bart Simpson in the audiobook version. Because Bart's got a great quote where he says, Lisa, she's like a milk dud. She's sweet on the outside, but poison on the inside. And, of course, that's not really true about milk duds. I just don't want to get a lawsuit on your hands, Rick. But but it is true about a lot of these phrases. I love little cliches and proverbs and sayings. I collect them. One's from Benjamin Franklin. A penny saved is a penny earned. When I was growing up, my dad had a lot of these, and he used to give them to me. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. You can't change horses in midstream. Now, so often, these are useful as guideposts to hang on. However, when applied in the wrong direction, they can really lead us astray and end up costing a lot of money, time, and opportunity.
And you say so many of these are self-evident that it's difficult to dispute. You hear that. It makes perfect sense, and we accept it as fact, and we move on with that assumption being made.
Yeah, that's the truth. And in different teams, I think there are different ones that may carry a little bit more weight. A lot of this has to do with change. How is your team, how is your company at accepting change and moving forward? Because a lot of times, whether we say it out loud or not, we're relying on things, ways of the past. We're doing what we're doing a lot of times on precedent, more than on purpose. So very often you'll hear, well, that's just the way we're doing it. Or I'm not sure why we're doing it this way, but I was taught to do it this way. Or that's just how we do things here. So those are good things to listen for, because when you hear a rationale that's based simply on the past and on precedent, it's probably pretty weak.
And the scary thing is, and you have this in the book, Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. Jack Quarles with us, the author. The book is available all across the country. ExpensiveSentences.com is his website. You can land our website and get information on the book as well. And you talk about when we take this as fact, it really puts limitations on our thinking, doesn't it? And that costs us, it limits options, that ends up costing us money, costs us dearly.
You know, Rick, in our culture, we're very aware of stereotypes, particularly when they involve people, right? We don't want to put somebody in a box or make assumptions about somebody based on their appearance or their gender or even their educational background. And I'm glad we have that awareness, and that conversation is going on a lot. And not that we've totally overcome it, but I think there's a high awareness that when we use some sort of stereotype based on somebody's background, that's really not a good thing to do. what I believe is that we use stereotypes a lot for situations. And our brain kind of works the same way. It looks for a pattern. It looks for a template. And it says, oh, well, this fits into this one. It says, well, look, that costs more, but you get what you pay for. And our brains are desperate to accept these explanations and connections because we're processing so much information. So we need to be aware that we're wired for assumptions and we're wired for bias. And that applies to how we process information and make decisions. That gives us the opportunity to step back and say, okay, that's my instinct. Instinct is right a lot of the times, but instinct can be wrong a lot of the time. So let me ask a few questions, get more specific, and see whether this is a case where I should follow that old proverb, that cliche, that instinct, or whether I should go in a different direction.
No, it's interesting in the book, Expensive Sentences, in the beginning, we see your evolution as this is becoming sort of obvious to you. And then it's like, well, this really is a problem that we need to address. You're sitting in there with hundreds and hundreds of clients. You're investing in time and money. And you say most of these would lay out a very logical plan. This is how we're going. This is the roadmap we're going to follow. And for in many of these cases, they got diverted when they would hit one of these little sayings out there that would suddenly stop everything.
That's what kind of shocked me once I realized how pervasive this was. You know, this started when I was director of procurement at a national financial services company, a name that everybody knows. And I found a vendor that was about $1 million a year.
I love this story.
Yeah, well, this is kind of the origin story, but I didn't know who this vendor was. It belonged to Human Resources. So I made my way down two floors to the office of the Director of Human Resources. I said, hey, I noticed this expense. It's about $1 million a year. It's in your department. Do you know what it is? And she said, oh, yeah, that's our background check provider. We use them to screen everybody that comes into our call centers because they have access to financial information, and that made sense. So I kind of got that. Then she said, Jack, I know what you're trying to do, but you don't need to worry about it. So I took the bait. I said, okay, what am I trying to do and why do I not need to worry about it? And she said, well, you're trying to drive the price down. You're trying to save money, but you don't need to worry about it because this company hasn't raised our prices in 8 years. Now, that sounded pretty good to me, but I didn't know much about background checks. So I set up an appointment with the vice president of human resources a couple weeks later. And I went up to his office and he said, Jack, we love these guys. And you know what's really good about them? I said, what? He said, they haven't raised our prices in 8 years. Something about hearing the same words a second time kind of, you know, makes your spidey senses tingle a little bit. But I didn't really realize the danger there. We did move forward with a shopping exercise. We went out and talked to other vendors. And, of course, my first call was to the incumbent vendor, the company we were working with already. And I called up the salesperson. And, you know, salespeople never like to be called by procurement guys anyway.
Exactly.
But he said, hey, why are you calling me? You know, we've got a good relationship. And you know what else? Ready? We haven't raised your prices in 8 years. So make the story short, we found a slightly better product than we were getting for less than half the price. So instead of spending $1 million a year, we started spending actually less than $500,000 every year. Big savings and a great win for a procurement guy, right? I like that. But when you think about it, the culprit in the story, the reason we'd been overpaying probably millions of dollars over prior years, was this idea that, well, the price hasn't gone up, so we must be doing fine. And that makes sense on one level, right? There are a lot of areas in which if the price isn't going up, you are doing fine.
Yes.
However, in this area, there was so much disruption and so much change that we were overpaying dramatically and wasting tons of money. And that really opened my eyes to this phenomenon. I went back to my boss and said, hey, I think we haven't raised your prices in 8 years. Turned out to be an expensive sentence. And he laughed and he said, yeah, I think I've heard a few of those around here. And he was right, because I found that just about every project I worked on after that, what really drove the decision wasn't the data and the analysis. It wasn't logic. It ended up being these assumptions and biases that very smart, senior, savvy leaders had in their minds. And they weren't totally off base, right? These biases had some grounding in reality. However, they really blinded us from seeing the truth and a lot of opportunity for not just saving money, but for keeping jobs and for improving products and improving service. And I think this is a real common phenomenon in most companies in our country.
Jack Worrells, our guest on the program, Amazon bestselling author, his new book, Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. widespread belief really, in the particular case you were talking about, was highly misleading. And you say it's not just in business. You say that you're convinced expensive sentences are silently sabotaging companies, nonprofits, schools, families, churches, teams, governments, and individuals. So the application is more than a business win from your book, isn't it?
Yeah, Rick, you know what's interesting is I did write that in the book. However, since I finished the book and published it and I've been promoting it, I've really become more convinced of the damage these sentences do beyond business and beyond profits and dollars. I spoke in an event and a doctor came up afterwards and he said, Jack, you know, I believe in my field, I've seen that many diagnoses are expensive sentences. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, I believe that I've seen many patients that are sort of tagged with a certain syndrome or a certain disease, and that shapes their course of treatment, but it's not exactly right for them. It's not optimal for them. I thought that was pretty interesting. I did a podcast with a woman who said that she works with a lot of underprivileged youth, and the expensive sentence that she hears that breaks her heart is when young people say, well, that's the only job I can get. You know, the only thing I'm qualified for is flipping burgers now. Nothing wrong with flipping burgers, but when somebody has that attitude that that's the only thing they can do, it's really quite tragic, and she had seen this firsthand. I spoke at a men's event, and a man stood up and shared that he remembered in third grade, and this man was probably 20 years older than I, he was probably in his mid-60s or late 60s, he said he remembered in third grade hearing his teacher tell his parents that he wasn't smart, and that haunted him for decades. That was an expensive sentence that limited him.
Yeah, I mentioned
the limitations. Right, the application is broad.
Yeah, I mentioned the limitations, and you talk about that throughout the book, expensive sentences, that's a limitation we're putting on ourselves because in many cases we just go ahead and we accept that. One that you mentioned before that applies to all aspects of our lives is it's not too late to turn back now. You know, for Custer, that might have been something that was applicable, but that really stops a lot of people, doesn't it? We feel that, okay, we're in so far, and you really stop assessing the situation and accept the fact that we've got to go forward because here we are. We can't turn around now.
The economists have a simple answer for this, for sunk cost, right? When you're looking about decisions you made yesterday or money you spent yesterday, that's called a sunk cost. And clinically, what you're supposed to do is simply ignore it. So when you make a decision for the future, you ignore sunk costs. You don't think about the past. Now, from the past, you've learned some things and you have some things, but it doesn't really matter how much money you spent or how much time you spent. The only problem with that economic solution is that people don't do it. People are terrible at it. And behavioral economists have studied this at great length, and psychologists have as well. And we are so prone to weigh the past so heavily when we're making future decisions. And you think about people that stay in the relationship too long, right? Long after everybody around them knows it's doomed. Or you think about people that stay in a career where they're really not happy and they're not using their gifts the right way. But they think, well, gosh, I've been doing this for 8 years. I can't do something else now. And this becomes quite tragic. And as you said, these words that we say are so powerful. And look, these expensive sentences is not a simple fix, but I believe it's an access point. And if you do change your words, you can start changing your thinking as well.
And you've got in the book expensive sentences, and we'll talk about it with Jack on future programs, but steps and challenges to identify words and whether they're friend or foe. In some cases, it makes absolutely perfect sense. In other cases, when you think about it, it really doesn't. Time going by way too quickly. You do some great examples throughout the book. One, you say you can change horses, the saying being that you can't change horses in midstream. And you use some perfect examples. Let's talk about IBM as one. You've got great examples of businesses that did change horses and survived and thrived because of it.
Absolutely. And if you look at some of both the successes and both the failures of today or of yesteryear, we see examples amply all over the place. Now, especially today, it's always been that things are changing, but I do think the pace of change has increased. Look at our old stalwarts of retail, Kmart and Sears. Now, 30 years ago, nobody could have imagined that they wouldn't be around forever, that the way of shopping wouldn't change so radically that they'd really have the rug pulled out from under them. But that's essentially what happens, and it won't be long before we don't see any Kmarts or Sears. What I'm wondering is, 30 years ago or 20 years ago, was somebody in that boardroom saying, what can we do to get more business online? What can we do to adapt so that we're not left behind, or at least we have some other options? You see a retailer like Walmart, and they are making that choice. They're getting more online and with some success. So changing horses is something that we really have to do.
You mentioned something before, and I did mention that one of the entities impacted by this, Teams, the slogan, that's the way we've always done it, the blank way. And you say fit in your school, your team, your company, or whatever. I'll throw Exxon in there. The Exxon way, that's how we do things. And when you think about it, that really is limiting, isn't it? They use that as a badge of honor, and that means basically there's no adaptability that we're going to offer.
And this can be a great litmus test if you're in one of these organizations, because if you're promoting change, look, whether we're CEOs, whether we're junior level, whether we're salespeople, if we're leaders, we're leading change and we're trying to bring positive change to our teams and those around us. And when we run up against, well, that's just the way we do it, or no, you can't do that. That doesn't work here. That's not the Exxon way, as you said. That's not the Navy way, they used to say.
Right.
Well, then I think you need to ask the question, is that resistance so deep that I'm not going to change the culture, or can I come at it and is leadership going to listen? Now, what should replace that? What's more powerful than precedent? The answer is purpose. If you know what your purpose is and you're driving toward that, then you should be able to say, well, look, yeah, maybe that's the old way we've done it. Maybe we've done it that way for 50 years, but I'm going toward these goals. This is my direction. This is my endpoint. And that's why I'm suggesting this new approach. And if that's listened to, then I think you can have a lot of hope that your organization can change. However, if you keep running up to that and nobody's willing to accept purpose over precedent, then I think you have to realize that you can't change everything. And you may be in a culture that's really kind of stuck in the past. And you may make the choice that a different environment is better for you.
Well, you help us through that process of determining, again, whether the words, the sentences are friend or foe. In many cases, they are friends. It makes perfect sense for what we're talking about. We are in too far at this point. Let's go forward. You have to make that determination. But at least at that point, you know you've thought it through, so you're giving a logical conclusion to that. You're just not assuming it and moving on with really no information.
There's so many cases in which you can improve your decision dramatically with a small amount of time. So what I encourage clients to do, to companies I'm working with or leadership teams, when you hit one of those points and you say, well, is it too late to turn back now, right? Do we need to stick with this course? Step back and take 20 minutes and brainstorm. Okay, if we were to change, what are the steps and what are the costs? And don't let yourself be lazy and say, well, it would cost a ton of money to change. No, go a little more than that and say, okay, well, how much would it cost? Maybe you don't know the exact amount, but a ballpark figure is not that hard to come up with. And making decisions based on a few notes on the paper and some ballpark figures of the dollar amount is so much better than making decisions on one of these lazy assumptions or platitudes like, oh, it's too late to change now, or it's going to be incredibly hard to switch, or whatever that is. So I always encourage people to take a few minutes to get more specific. Vagary, ambiguity, that's the real enemy here. And that's what gives these sentences their power, and their power to steal from you money, time, and opportunity. When you get specific, then you can really see a lot more options open up.
I'm going to take 1 minute here at the end. One of the things, and I guess this is where we started with your working with the company, and they decided just because they haven't raised the prices, that's not necessarily a good thing or in our favor. The expensive sentence, they're not just vendors, they're our partners. And when you think about that, that's a little bit scary because that, in most cases, I'm assuming is not necessarily true. I'm assuming a lot of businesses lost a lot of money with that expensive sentence.
You can find a lot of anecdotes of this, too. When a relationship got too tight so that it didn't go under the regular scrutiny, the regular analysis that a buyer-vendor relationship would. And whenever that happens, whenever you're dealing with somebody that becomes sort of special, becomes somebody that you don't challenge or you don't question. Sometimes a CEO has a favorite consultant and everything they say is golden. Sometimes there's a vendor that you've relied on for years and so you would never challenge them. But what you need to do is say, well, look, as part of our process, we do every once in a while challenge everybody we're working with. We go through this process to analyze. We go through talking to some competitors to see what it's like. That's so healthy because when you get a stagnant relationship that's not able to be looked in from the outside, there's potential for lots of things. Some just laziness or not as progressive as you could be or spending more money than you could. But it could go farther than that and get to corruption and things that you really don't want.
Yeah, one of the sentences you have is we trust them, which a lot of people throw that out. It's an excellent book, Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. You can use this in your private life. You can use this in your public life. You can use it for business, all sorts of applications. Jack Quarles, our guest in the program, that's Q-U-A-R-L-E-S. The book is available all across the country. If you go to Amazon, Jack is a best-selling Amazon author. You'll get a good deal on a lot of great information on the book there. ExpensiveSentences.com is Jack's website for the book. And if you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you can link on directly to all of those websites. Jack, I'm looking forward to having you back. I've got 43 more pages of questions just from the first half of the book. It's an excellent book. Thank you so much for being with us on the program.
We definitely have more to talk about, Rick. So thank you so much. I really enjoy this.
Looking forward to having Jack back in the program. The book, once again, Expensive Sentences, Debunking the Common Myths That Derail Decisions and Sabotage Success. This Week in America, web presence at thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.